Hey everybody, it's Joey here. Something a little different at the beginning of the show until probably the beginning of December. As some of you know, I do some charity work for an agency called the Wayside House of Hamilton. It's integrated residential addiction treatment and supportive housing for men. I've been on the board at Wayside for the better part of a decade now. And, you know, in the addictions community, I really think that we're doing some of the best work in the country, certainly some of the best work in the province. And as many people who listen to this show will understand, because of the rise in prices and the difficulty with getting funding from our usual sources, we've started taking it on ourselves to try and become more autonomous through fundraising. And this is where you come in, I hope. In my Twitter profile, there's a link to our annual fundraiser, the Step Up for Wayside, where a lot of us will be doing a 5K walk or run, but even if you're not in the area and can't make it to that sort of thing, your donation would be appreciated. We stretch those dollars further, and they have more effect than almost any other charitable donation that you can make. And, you know, it's a cause that's near and dear to me and certainly affects someone you know, even if that person is not actively seeking treatment or help. So consider that. And, of course, all your generosity to the podcast and to Wayside is appreciated. It means so much to me that this community has really come together in a lot of different ways. And I hope that the community comes together for Wayside as well. So thank you in advance for your support, and I hope you enjoy the show. The Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Just one thing before we start today. We were in person for this interview, obviously, and I fat-fingered the pad toggle on my Zoom. So if you skip through the first minute or 2 minutes, you'll notice the audio gets better. And in the video, you can see I'm kind of messing with the dials. But at about 6 minutes, I realize exactly what happened and I fixed the audio. So bear with me for that first little while. It's the first in-person rip we've done in some time. And I think you'll still enjoy the content. We had a great time with Jordan and the BitBuy team. So enjoy the episode. Friends and enemies, welcome. Oh, here we go. That, unbelievable. Did you say that for the... Welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, live and direct from, do you want to just say where we are?
Toronto.
Wow, come on.
Be more specific.
Me and Len are here with our friend Jordan, who works for...
We are at the BitBuy HQ.
BitBuy HQ, University Avenue, Toronto. Happy to be here. Thank you for having us.
Oh, our pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Thank you for the coffee, my second one of the day here.
Thank you for not offering me a coffee.
So, I mean, it's only fair that we start with your story that I've heard you tell a couple of times on a couple of different shows, and every time it's just as good as the last. So who are you, and, you know, sort of where did you get your Bitcoin start? Or crypto start, I guess.
No, we wanted to hear Bitcoin start.
We're going to be fair to him. Jordan's going to have some questions to answer about the whole, you know, ecosystem coming up. So,
Yeah, so Jordan Anderson, Chief Operating Officer here at BitBuy Technologies Incorporated. Got into Bitcoin 2013, wow. 2014. Vintage. Had a crazy friend who, smart, genius friend, crazy friend. You know, everybody has a crazy friend who pretty much like technologist, libertarian, so a little bit on each side.
That's a Bitcoin cocktail.
It was the perfect Bitcoin cocktail. He kind of got me watching documentaries that were questioning, you know, who's Satoshi Nakamoto. That was the big thing back in the day. And so kind of got into it, but I was working, you know, corporate life at the time. And then end of 2017, 2018, like I started buying, like I never bought any back then. But, you know, we ended up at the time, like, went to Bitcoin Expo 2014. That's actually where I got this shirt.
Oh, it's vintage.
Yeah, that's Bitcoin. A good. That's a good shirt. That's a really good shirt.
You know, Bitcoin Expo at the Metro Toronto Convention Center here in Toronto. We had the booth, the Ethereum booth back then. Vitalik was at the booth. Joseph Lubin was at the booth. Diorio was at the booth. Like, I don't, that was before their pre-sale. It's like, just like back in the day, they just,
they were pre-mining at that stage.
Yeah.
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 Diorio's subject of some commentary in that Ethan Liu book that just came out too, Once a Bitcoin Miner.
He's just got out from what I understand. Because harassment or whatever, or maybe that's too strong a term, but he's no longer in the game. He's departed from it. So yeah.
Anyway.
They also had that wallet too. Like he had the wallet, Jax.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember they had an office down the street.
It's not he was doing the harassing. He is being harassed. I don't want to. It's just, I want to just set that record.
We're going to get nuked by some lawyer.
Yeah. So he's one that's being subjected to this, unfortunately.
So what? So this is 2013.
Is it, yeah. No, what? 2014, Bitcoin Expo 2013. Didn't buy any. I was working at a big corporation at the time. So kind of got into it. Was learning about it, was interested, but didn't go ahead and first. So, you know, some time passed. Skip ahead to 20. I started buying some in 2016.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, it's time to buy. Bought some in 2016 and then saw what happened in 2017, kind of sitting on the sidelines. I was working at Yahoo at the time.
Yeah.
So got my taste for big tech. Product. I was doing sales. I was helping with the product, growing that business here in Canada, traveling a lot. And then I had the opportunity to come back and join three guys full time. Bitbuy. Bitbuy was originally launched in 2016. I came in full time end of 2017, and then we got to work. There was basically four of us 2018, and then
crash, of course,
right into the bear market. Best time to get into Bitcoin and crypto.
Hey man, that's what we got into. You know, that was around the time. That's time that if you got, yeah, you know, they say in investing, an investment or a trade that goes against you becomes an investment very quickly. So probably true in your professional life as well.
Yeah, know? Exactly. Yeah. What do they say? Unicorns are built in the bear market.
Ah, I like it. Okay, all right.
So
for such a long time. Where's the Lambo and when can I get a ride in it? I want
in. Oh, I won't tell you where I keep my Ledger wallet.
No. Yeah, true. Okay, tell me this then. Who's on the original squad for Bitbuy in 2017 that you said? 16 or 17 you said? You guys opened up shop? So who's the original?
Yeah, so basically I left my job full time. Bitbuy was launched in 2016. Right. It was just when it was launched, it was just a very simple buy sell service. Go on your wallet, connect, boom, buy a bit of Bitcoin, withdraw it, create an account, like very simple. And then there was like a couple thousand users. I was like, okay, I'm coming in. So it was essentially like an MVP, minimum viable product that was created. Coming in, myself, Dean, who you just met, and then a guy named Chris and Adam. And it was the four of us, heads down. We got office space in basically an attic. At first we had no money. We went and bought fold out tables from Costco and fold out chairs. And I quit my job at Yahoo. I was doing pretty well. I was like, all right, startup life. Here I go, heads in. My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, thought I was nuts. She's like, what are you doing?
You could swear if you want. No worries.
How dare she?
That's a good potential good time to swear. But
how dare she, first of all, think that?
Yeah. No, of course, right?
Yeah. I think we're all in the same boat. Like, I did convince my wife, too. So, yeah. Don't feel bad about that.
So she thought I was nuts. Family thought I was nuts. We were able to raise some seed money. And we just got to work. And it was a lot of work. And that was 2018.
I'm curious, at the onset, what type of coins did you offer?
It was just Bitcoin.
Strictly Bitcoin.
Bitcoin, and then ETH came pretty close after that. Yeah. And then BCH and LTC were after that.
Yeah. Are you guys still doing BCH?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Yep.
LTC, yeah. BCH, yeah, ETH, Bitcoin.
Nine right now.
Nine? Hit me with them. EOS, what's the list? Okay.
XLM, Link.
Yeah.
Aave.
Yeah.
Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
BCH, I don't know. LTC.
This is EOS. Like naming the draft beers. The XLM. Restaurant. Yeah.
So, excellent. One question that was asked from us to relate to you, when are you going to be listing a stable coin? And they were asking maybe a Tether, but I understand maybe that may not be the best one to list. But are there any intentions to list a stable
coin? Definitely intentions to list stable coins and intention to list more coins shortly.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. So what, I guess, you know, it wouldn't be a Canadian Bitcoiners interview if I didn't give you a bit of the gears on the swath of offerings you guys have. So give me the business case for offering some of these tokens that are, for example, linked to DeFi. I think Aave is a DeFi token. So are you guys concerned at all about sort of the security adjacency for some of these tokens? Because in the States now, you're starting to see some movement from the government gears in terms of regulation and maybe, you know, destruction, too strong a term probably, but you get the idea. They're maybe going to regulate away some of these gains and stuff like DeFi staking, right, in some cases. So what is the business case for listing those things, and are you concerned about those risks? And if you can, you might not be able to answer this, but in Canada, what are you seeing on that front?
Yeah, I mean, look, we all know what's happening with the securities regulators. So within a lot of that regulatory framework, there's specific things that, you know, we need to look at and think about when it comes to listing these tokens. So totally a concern. A lot of what we've listed so far is legacy, right? So it's stuff that we've listed in the past where maybe some of those concerns weren't as strong previously. So I think there's a couple of things we're going to always look at, and it's definitely like liquidity, the ability, you know, where else is it being offered? Like, let's say for whatever reason, you see some of these other platforms delist coins, you know, are we going to leave the user holding the bag? Like, that's the last thing we want to do. So we're not going to list something that isn't widely traded across other platforms.
Okay. And so you must have the OSC on speed dial on your phones. And do you approach them in order to get, well, when you're going to seek or thinking about listing a new coin or token or whatever, do you seek their approval or their guidance prior to doing so?
Look, at this, I wouldn't necessarily say that we seek their approval or guidance. We have to operate as an independent business and make our own choices. But I think we've looked at guidance, and we are going to continue to look at guidance like across the board, whether it's guidance that the SEC has put out with the Howey test, trying to look at classifying these different tokens as securities. Like, we're going to look at a number of different things. And I'm also going to like lean heavily on our compliance staff to do that and make recommendations back to me and the rest of the leadership team on, well, is this acceptable? And there's a whole framework that we put together internally that we're putting these tokens and coins through, especially as we continue to list more in the future.
So we should mention, first of all, amazing office you guys have here. I was expecting to come in here and see 20 guys all under 30 years old.
Piled in one small room.
Yeah, like one guy on a Segway, maybe another guy with like two straws and a Red Bull stuck with in front of three Mac laptops, something like that. But you got some guys here who are, and this is a term of endearment in my view, a little longer in the tooth than I was expecting, one. And two, you got a huge staff. So what are the benefits? And I don't want you to talk about your competitors so much, but you can reference them if you want. I mean, I'm sure some of your competition has a much more streamlined crew, so to speak. But I want you to tell me why you think BitBuy is best with this sort of wide range of expertise, presumably, different age groups, different experience levels. What is the benefit there?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Joey. And I think what we're trying to build is not just a company, a crypto company that works right now in 2021. We're building out a 5-year roadmap of a Canadian financial institution that offers crypto assets that can be more than just, you know, bunch of guys sitting around, you know, on their laptops writing code, which is what we were for a long time. But, you know, as we've scaled up and we've raised additional capital and we've grown the team and we've grown the user base, you know, we're trying to look further out as to like, you know, what does it mean to be like a Canadian financial crypto institution? So that's why you see, you know, a compliance department, an accounting department, marketing, account management, working with our high net worth individuals. Of course, our engineering team, whether that's product, that's back end, that's front end, or, you know, our security team. So there's all these teams that we have that are integral to running a company like the one we're running.
What does it look like to build a Canadian, what was that term you used there? Canadian crypto financial institution. I don't know of any other Canadian crypto financial institutions that exist, Jordan. So what does that look like to you guys? What's the, give me the 30,000 foot. Because I think, to be honest with you, I think you're right. I think this is going to go that direction for a lot of these crypto companies if they have the, you know, the resiliency and the team in place to make it happen. So what's it look like for you guys? What do you think?
I think it looks like not just retail traders. I think it's institutional traders. It's different ancillary type businesses that connect to the liquidity service, whether that's other types of crypto service offerings, whether it's payment services, ATM services, hedge funds, all these different types of ecosystem players that are going to be relying off this piece of infrastructure to be able to continue to scale up the ecosystem. So I look at us as not just a standalone, but I look at us as part of a greater ecosystem. And then in addition to that, if we're going to want to continue to grow at our product offering, we're going to need to be able to do everything, of course, above board to be able to offer different types of financial products in the future to the user base.
So I want you to show your product a little bit here.
Yeah.
What separates you from your competitors? Give us a few pointers or many pointers that for makes sure. you better than your competitors.
Who do you view as your competitors? Because you're describing, I mean, Len and I are partial to ShakePay for a number of different reasons. One of them is the simplicity, but I'm also not ever going to assume that ShakePay is going to cast a net for pensions or hedge funds. And those are two terms you've used since we've been in the office here.
I don't think I said pension fund.
Maybe not during...
But maybe, hey, that wouldn't be so bad, would it?
Maybe it could have been someone in the office. I forget.
Someone you got some inside information on maybe one way to...
Okay, so let's say it's just hedgies then.
Well, ShakePay has an OTC desk, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, who are some of the guys that call their OTC desk? Probably some family offices, right? Which is essentially just high net worth family that's made a ton of money in a certain type of business and wants exposure to this asset class. So nonetheless, like that type of business could be classified as an institutional investor that relies on ShakePay. Just you may not be privy to it because that's not necessarily your use case or many of the listeners' use cases. But nonetheless, they have to be able to build out the type of infrastructure that can facilitate that type of business. Or at least they're trying to.
Yeah, okay.
So, to go back to your question.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your question?
Who's your competition? And how? Well, Len's question was, how do you differentiate yourself? Because I wouldn't, yeah, maybe I'm wrong about the ShakePay thing, because the OTC I hadn't considered. But, I mean, I look at some of the other Canadian players, and I just don't think that they're, at least not in their public-facing statements, and we've had a few of the CEOs and different people from those exchanges on as well, and we'll continue to, but I haven't heard sort of this... This backed off view of what the business could become and the landscape they're really trying to address. But in talking to you and talking to some of the other C-suite and some of the team that, you know, since we've been here, I get the feeling you guys are thinking a little bigger than that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, they certainly seem to have long-term vision.
Yeah, here, so yeah, yeah.
I'm curious to hear a little bit
so
more.
So who's
about
your competition? How you better?
Yeah, well, look, you know, I think the competition is a bunch of people who have already been on your show. Big fans, by the way. but I mean, I think you've already named a few of them. I think that the retail user base that uses BitBuy is who we're building for. It's who, you know, every day when I wake up and before I go to sleep, like I'm thinking about the user and how can we improve the product to, you know, meet the user's demand and request for, you know, excellence, essentially. So I think that there's a ton of platforms that that we compete directly with on the retail user front. And, you know, I don't have to name them by name. I think we all know who they are. But I think when it comes to how we're different, I think that there's a number of things about our product that makes us offer something a little bit more advanced. And so when we look at trading, like how you trade with many of these platforms, you're simply given a buy or a bid or an ask or a buy or sell price, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And that's it. And you can trade and you can buy and you can sell, and that's it. but there's no limit orders. Or if there's limit orders, there's no order book. So one thing that separates BitBuy is that this is a crypto marketplace where we are allowing buyers and sellers to interact with each other. And so in the different, within the coins that I mentioned to you, you know, they're all paired to Canadian dollars. And you can go in and you can set your limit order and you can literally see your order sit in the order book until it gets hit one way or another. So you're setting your own price. In addition to that, there's also a public API where you can come in, right, and request write access to access that API and then be able to programmatically place your orders into the book. So I don't know one other retail crypto platform in Canada that's allowing that right now or has that offering the way that we do. And that may be something to do with the way that they like to flow the orders. But we've taken a different approach where we're trying to build something bigger in some cases, maybe because of the fact that it's a marketplace.
Right. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. That was good. He's rolling downhill there a little bit.
Yeah. No, yeah. And actually, I just want to go on to something else that we touched upon this numerous times with guests is volatility and large volume. During peaks, like large volume times where lots of trades are going through, some exchanges, they just can't cope with it. And they go offline for a period of time. And that's their mechanism to cope with it. I'm curious how BitBuy deals with high volume times. And just this year, we had a couple of really large, like I remember one in April, another one in August, if I recall correctly. How does BitBuy handle large volume times? What sort of mechanisms did they put in place to ensure that people are able to buy and sell during these times?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you guys both know we've been doing this for a long time.
Yep.
We've scaled up. And part of the way that we've been able to scale up is that we don't just scale up by hiring more people. We have scaled up by hiring the right people who know also how to, who have the years of experience to scale up these engineering platforms that we've built on top of. So whether that means hiring people from AWS or hiring people from Shopify or hiring sort of the best engineers that have come to BitBuy because they see what we're building and they want to be a part of it and they know how to scale these platforms. So, you know, we talked a little bit about before about the show, about the microservices architecture, the way that the different server instances can scale to multiple different locations to be able to build the platform up. Like that's key. You know, the way that the signup flow works or that people log in, all this stuff is super important. Of course, like that's why like our CTO and, you know, has the job that he has and he's hired the people that he has and so forth. And then in addition to that, beyond a technical standpoint, like what the engineering team is doing, there's also just the processes that we've built. So the automation that we built, the APIs that we've integrated with, the other third-party service providers that power a lot of the services that BitBuy relies on to be able to offer the service that we offer. Like things that you guys wouldn't necessarily like think about, but like just the way that SMS gets sent, right? A lot of people rely on SMS. They don't move to a two-factor authentication method like Google or Authy or something like that, two of which we also offer. So, you know, you need to be able to have a service that is always going to deliver those SMS codes. And so that's like one example of maybe, you know, another 20 examples of things that need to consistently work in times of high traffic.
So I guess you give me a lot of good examples of things you guys do well. What do you think you don't do well? What are the things you guys are working on now?
Well, I think you kind of touched on it already, like with the coins. I think that we've been one of the platforms that have been slower to roll out new coins, and I'll definitely, you know, come up to that right away. I think that though one of the reasons is that because of the marketplace, there's a lot more that needs to be taken into consideration when a new coin comes out. But I'm very excited to kind of say that I know that a lot more coins are coming quickly, even though I know you don't care because it's just,
you're
a Bitcoin guy, but
I want to see the landscape grow. And I know that more coins is part of that
it's going to be part of that process, whether I buy them or not.
Right.
It's part
and,
of the process.
And when you see these international exchanges that offer hundreds of coins, you know, now retract from, for example, Ontario, and Ontarians can't sign up now to a lot of these platforms. They're literally restricting new signups. I know this for a fact. This is becoming more and more important.
It's not to your detriment that you're slowly adding coins. I think it's to your benefit you're doing so, because you're doing your due diligence, ensuring you're adding the right product to your exchange, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a rather good thing. Now, I do have a question. I'm not sure if you could answer this. What is your highest volume coin or token that you sell?
I'd love to know that.
If you can't answer it, it's okay.
No. We can answer it. So one thing that's important to note, guys, is that we're the only Canadian crypto trading platform that's listed on CoinMarketCap. So you can go on CoinMarketCap right now and see our 24-hour volume across every single market.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah.
So it's consistently...
Why is that? Because the order book you described earlier. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, and the API.
Okay.
So you can go on CoinMarketCap. We can check right now. It's public data, which is the most traded market. It's usually either Bitcoin or ETH.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes XRP.
XRP. Ooh. Yeah, I know. Well, okay, so I guess Jordan, why? I mean, the API thing. I'm not a technical guy, but even I know that giving API access is valuable. Like you mentioned, to a lot of people who want to place automated orders, for example, and things of that nature.
Yeah, so we've also connected to third party services like Passive that allows dollar cost averaging, or Coinly that produces like more enhanced tax statements. So that you can give your Coinly account, which is a crypto tax accounting software, read access only, so it's not that API connection will have no ability to trade into your account access to help you with your taxes.
So why aren't other exchanges doing this? It's because I think you already broke it down, but I'm going to try and recreate that explanation, because you guys have an order flow that allows for that sort of access to take place and other exchanges don't. Do I have that right?
I think it comes down to the sophistication of the product suite that we offer. We made a choice several years ago that we wanted to go down this route. And it was through some fortunate events and essentially an acquisition acquihire that we actually did in 2019 in sort of that tail end, late 2018, early 2019 in the tail end of the bear market. And that worked out quite favorable for us, because what happened is we were building, heads down. 2018, we raised our seed capital. We started hiring some key guys. We were working with some excellent people on the M&A and finance side. And we found a company that essentially the founder had invested all this money to build an exchange top down. We were bottoms up in market. He had this excellent software that had all of this order matching technology. And we did a deal with him where basically we said, okay, take equity in BitBuy, and we're going to merge this technology, take in this staff, grow our business, because he was kind of running out of money and he wasn't in market. And then after we did that, we launched all these additional products with a lot of that R&D work that he did. Then we raised a seed extension round to get that to market. We got that to market. That was all throughout 2019. Then 2020 hits, and then all of a sudden now it's the pandemic, and we're 12 people, and we have all this software, and it hasn't really been put to the test. And now it's scale mode. I'm partly working sales and OTC desk. Like my role as COO is like client services, account management, marketing, and operations. And all of a sudden, every lawyer, doctor, business owners calling me saying, I want to send you guys $100,000, $200,000 to buy Bitcoin. And we were in market with all this technology, and all of a sudden, boom, like they send the money, they can go through our OTC desk, but then they just, boom, they put it right into the order book, or they put their standing order sitting there. And so it was precarious timing where we had built a lot of the initial product, got it to market, and then the market took off. And we were there, and now it was just about building on top of that. That's why you didn't see us adding a whole ton of coins in the in this bull market, because the focus wasn't necessarily building a platform that had all these offerings. It was building a really good platform, being really good at what we already had, right? So being able to scale up that infrastructure and focus on just basically having like this brick house that wasn't built on stilts, you know what I mean? That was like the super important thing. Like, it's kind of like the same thing with Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is very similar to how Bitcoin exchanges need to operate. They need to be secure, robust. They're not necessarily going to, if you're changing it too much, you can break things. Like, Bitcoin's not like that, right? It's been the same thing for a long time, and they're rarely making changes to how that code works.
Taproot's coming out next month. This month, sorry. So we're very close to it. But aside from that, I'm just curious, look in your crystal ball, and you may not be able to give all your secrets away here, but where do you envision Bitbuy to be in, say, 2, 3, even 5 years from now? Because this space is going to be evolving quite a bit in the next few years. And I'm curious to hear where you plan to intend to be going without giving up too much of your secrets, though.
Totally. So, you know, we already touched on the fact that, you know, more and more institutions are coming to the space. So you basically need to have best price, best execution, the most amount of liquidity, the most amount of coins, the most amount of products, whether it's new types of products that we can get approval for, yield, interest-bearing products, those types of things. As we continue to scale up this business, those are the types of things that we're going to be looking at to include in the platform. I see us at several hundred employees. I see us at really like a much larger version of what we are today that's more robust and has a better product offering and is obviously very much focused on the Canadian market, but I think we'll be in other international markets as well.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so what you said sounds really good. You've done a great job in this interview so far. The question I have for you is, why are you guys not considering going public when a lot of your peers, it seems to me, are on the going public roadmap? I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. Maybe you are considering it. I know you can't give probably that kind of forward guidance, but talk to me a bit about that. What are you guys thinking in terms of a listing?
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Based off that question, why do you think a company goes public?
To raise.
Yes.
To raise more money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think if we need to go public to raise money, then we will. But right now we don't.
Okay.
So we raised funds over the summer, so we're in a strong position right now from that perspective, where we're based off of our 6 to 12 month roadmap, and we're not going to need to raise additional funds right now this second. So that's not really something that we need to do right away. But doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
Because you guys sound like you got most of the regulatory stuff nailed down. You got a nice little legal team here, you said, that does a little bit of work for you guys as far as that. The product suite sounds like you have some transparency, maybe, that other competitors may not have at the moment. And so it seems to me that would make sense. Now, I guess the next question, if you don't need to raise, what's the raise environment like for you guys at the moment? You said you raised last summer. I would guess compared to 2016, 17, it's probably, you know, there's probably money falling from the ceiling these days.
Right, that's much easier.
Yeah, compared to back then. But what's it like? What's been like
for you
guys?
I guess without giving up too much information, we raised money in the summer. We raised a healthy amount. I'd look at that as Series A funding, 10 plus. Yeah. And we're cooking up something again. Good. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully, I can't disclose too much at the moment, but we're definitely cooking up something, and we'll definitely, when it comes and then when it's locked down, we'll make it public, and you guys can be one of the first guys we call to let them know.
I can't wait to get that call. I guess the other follow up there is, how come you guys have had, this is, again, I'm asking you adversarial questions here, maybe not for me, but
for you to kick us out at the end of this
for our list, for our listeners. How come you guys are having such an easy time raising, and some of these other companies that seem to me to be on a path to go public, some of them have said as much, I'm pretty sure, without using the P word, but how come they're not having the same ease of raise? Because it seems to me, and everyone we talk to, from small Bitcoin miners to, you know, Sue at Hut 8 said the same thing, people are lining up to write checks for them.
Right.
How come these other guys are going public if the raising is so easy in this environment? What's the... Can you speculate on it? Is that something you're willing to do?
I mean, who are we talking about who's going public?
I'll tell you after the show, but it's another, I think it's two other exchanges that are probably thinking about going public.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I don't think it's a bad move to go public. I think it's a great way to raise money. And we're fortunate in Canada to have very conducive public markets here, where, you know, you have Canadian Securities Exchange, you have Toronto Stock Exchange Venture, you have, NEO Exchange now. So, like, I don't think it's a bad move, and I don't think it's something that we're not heavily considering. I think it's just there's the right timing for everything, and I think that, you know, it's probably a great time to go public and to raise money right now, because we are in this, like, this hot sort of momentous Q4 where, you know, we just hit a new all-time high for Bitcoin the other week. So I don't think it's a bad move at all. I just think that there's definitely, you know, alternative methods and alternative strategies for companies. And I think in some cases, you know, if companies can raise privately and not necessarily go public right away, that's another strategy as well, right? And there may be different reasons why, you know, we may or may not do that. So I'm not writing it off, and I'm not saying that that's a bad move.
Okay. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on decentralized exchanges? I know that they might be quasi competitors to you, but I'm wondering if the sun is going to set on the DEXs, because with all these regulations rolling out and exchanges adhering to these regulations, people are more confident with actually putting their money in exchanges. So I'm wondering if DEXs are going to just eventually just sail off into sunset and we won't see them anymore, or if there's still an opportunity for them to be somewhat of a player in the system here.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that centralized exchanges and decentralized exchanges both play, like, different roles within the ecosystem. I think that centralized exchange obviously plays a much more fiat-focused role. Like, the fact that, you know, we're able to interact with people's bank accounts through the different funding withdrawal methods is super important. And that's, you know, that's going to continue to be important. So I think that CeFi, like, exchanges are going to need to continue to play that role. And there's obviously, like, different things that we can do that DEXs can do, and that, you know, the centralized exchange world is, like, a lot more, I'd say it's a lot further ahead in its roadmap. They've been around for longer. They're more robust. They built a lot more, whereas decentralized exchanges, they're still kind of getting started, still kind of early. So it's exciting to see what's gonna happen for both, and I can see the pros and cons of using either one in different situations.
You're looking at me oddly.
I want to bang on this door a bit. We talk a lot on our show about banks and how they're sort of falling behind, and so you guys are obviously, like you mentioned, fiat focus is an unkind term. You guys do a good job for retail investors who have that experience and want to somehow get some exposure to Bitcoin. You guys make it easy. That's a good thing, right? I guess I want to know what you think about the future of sort of retail banking in Canada, because you've mentioned a few things on the show that are, you know, you're really pounding on the foundation of some of the banking services, interest accounts, for example. You know, we've seen in the United States, BlockFi taking some heat from regulators. I think Ledin is going to see that here at some point too.
Celsius is another one.
Celsius was, you know, served.
Kentucky, I think, was the last.
They were served to C&D, right? Yeah. So those guys.
Didn't something happen with Coinbase where?
Coinbase too. They had to shut down their Ledin program. Right.
SEC,
you know,
gave them the heave on that.
You know, right. And you know, we joke on the show about how Coinbase. I mean, Brian Armstrong's probably going insane. He's shooting out scotch laced tweet storms late at night, shooting down 3-letter agencies. You know, right. Like, I don't think you guys are going to do that. But
they have a head on their shoulders.
But yeah, it sounds to me like you guys are, you know, ready to storm the castle in some respects at least. And so I'm wondering, you know, is there a way for you guys to offer those services that banks are kind of, you know, they've really planted their flag on that, Jordan. So what's the difference? You know, how's that going to play out?
Again, like, it's the same thing. Like, fundamentally, why are these? Why can BlockFi, Celsius, Coinbase, and all these new crypto companies outcompete the banks on these rates? And that kind of comes back to blockchain. Like, the velocity of these coins and this money being able to move them across blockchains is part of the reason, in my opinion, why these rates can be what they can, because there's so much more ability to be able to lend and facilitate trading, and there's all this demand from different parties and entities for these assets, whether it's one way or another. So there's this huge secondary lending market that's being created, and that's not going to go away. So, you know, I love like how disruptive this technology is to the traditional financial space, because, you know, guys like us, like if, you know, if we can go earn higher rates of return over here on a safe, you know, regulated SOC 2 compliant trading platform where our funds, for the most part, we believe they're safe. There's always going to be some risk. There's risk with traditional banks. There's always going to be some risk. But if we can take the right risk mitigation approaches and earn these rates, like that's not going to go anywhere. So it really just comes down to how do you do it within a regulatory environment that is actually going to allow it, because nonetheless, like just because it's a disruptive technology doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be properly regulated and can't allow people to earn those rates.
It seems to me that you guys, and you're not alone in this, I think a lot of the crypto brokers, exchanges, you know, you name the service, whatever the suite is, you guys have taken an approach that was really mainstreamed by Uber in the last 20 years, right? Like, we don't really care about your taxi chits. Your medallions don't mean shit to us. We're coming in. We're giving cheaper rides. The cars are cleaner, blah, 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 blah. Are you worried that there's going to be significant pushback? Because it's one thing to go, you know, to bump heads with a taxi union is one thing. But, I mean, the banks are a different kind of monolith. That's a 2,000-year business. You know, Shylock himself, you know, his portrait in the halls of whatever central bank you want to talk about. What do you think the likelihood is that in the modern world, whether it's here, America, Europe, you're really going to see a flashpoint coming from regulators in the next, I don't know, 5 years, 3 years? Probably going to be sooner than that. I mean, the price and the winds are in the sails of this thing now more than ever before. So you're heading towards whatever the outcome is. What do you think the likelihood of a serious flashpoint from regulators says no lending on these platforms? If you want money, it's got to be, you know, what is it here? Not FDIC.
I don't know.
CDIC.
CDIC, yeah.
Look, like I don't think these regulators want to stifle innovation, right? Like at the end of the day, people are going to want what they're going to want. And if we're not going aggressive and we're not trying to innovate and offer new products to Canadians, then we're dying. So, you know, really you could say, oh yeah, the bank's backs are up against the wall. So our backs are against the wall. Look, like, you know, we're a small business. You know, these banks are, you know, multi-billion dollar international corporations. So, like, that's kind of my take on it. It's like, you're either innovating or you're dying. So, I mean, obviously they want, like, if you read one of their reports, they want as much deposits as they can. They want to hold as much funds as they can, yeah. Right? And I don't think, you know, the big five are going anywhere, you know, like our entire, infrastructure and financial systems are all built on top of the traditional banking sector, all these different payment rails and where we keep all our money and so forth. But I mean, you know, if you look at the size of the current crypto market cap as an asset class, you know, at $2 trillion, like, yeah. Wouldn't be surprised to see that continue to grow. I believe it will continue to grow, and so how will that grow? What does crypto offer the regular person versus the traditional system? So it's things like this, these types of innovative products that are going to continue to get built and going to continue to have to be regulated. But nonetheless, like it's heading that way.
That's a good answer. Actually, you've given a lot of good answers. You're a little too far from your mic, but you've given a lot of good answers. Considering we usually give people like you know, the topic list, you've actually, in my opinion, you've fucking crushed so far. How long are we in? 40 minutes. Yeah,
you're nice.
Yeah,
nice.
We're keeping you a little longer. So, what you said there, you know, you're talking about the big five kind of sticking around a little longer and all these different things. And you're right. The entire financial ecosystem is reliant sort of on these banks, and a lot of people, especially in the older demo. Yeah, you can pull on that thing. It's pretty durable. I mean, if it's still around 2 years after I bought it, it's got to be durable. So, you know, these banks and whatnot, presumably are going to have to adjust to the Bitcoin world. So what adjustments, you know, and you can talk about this in terms of your product suite and your roadmap. What adjustments do you think that banks are going to have to make in order to remain relevant to the younger consumer? Because, you know, I think about myself. I'm 34. I haven't been to a bank, Jordan, unless it was absolutely required of me in 10 years. And I don't plan on going back anytime soon. I don't keep my money in a savings account. I don't invest in equities using my bank. So what's it going to take, again, in terms of your product suite, maybe to frame this to for those guys to remain relevant, in your opinion?
I mean, I want to just add on that. I think that the retail invest or retail client is one aspect, but the institutional, I wonder how much that makes up their profit margins. I wonder if, because I don't have the numbers in front of me, I would imagine that would be the tipping point once they come on, but just let you go take over from here.
I mean, it's a great question. I think that what's happened is you have all these types of new products, whether it's the, you know, the 3IQ Bitcoin fund or, you know, the ETFs that are coming out, and those are going to be the way that the traditional crowd accesses this asset class. So from that standpoint, that's like a very just basic, okay, buy Bitcoin, buy ETH, maybe buy a few other layer one network technologies and get charged like an annual rate, still get, you know, pay way higher fees than owning spot, but you're not going to be your own bank, right? You're not going to hold the asset class. You're not going to be able to move it. You're not going to be able to do all the other new innovative types of transactions or, you know, investments
stuff,
or
yeah.
whatever other types of stuff you can do, whether it's, you know, buying NFTs or art on the blockchain. I mean, that's one use case. All these traditional types of industries are coming to the blockchain, right? You mentioned interest rates. You know, we have digital gold. We have crowdfunding. We have investments, private fundraising. So all of these types of traditional financial sectors are being disrupted by the blockchain, and that you can see that happening in a very disruptive way in cryptocurrency. But the people that are actually involved in that space is a very small fraction of the actual market cap. So it's still so early. That's why this space on those use cases, I believe has, you know, 1000x type potential to grow across the board in terms of use case, right? Like in terms of network adoption. So the network adoption and curve, like, we're still very early. So I don't really have a crystal ball on how it's going to play out, but I believe it'll play out in a big way. And I think that we're just starting to see like those use cases emerge more and more within the last, you know, year or two, especially with the pandemic. It accelerated it. People are at home, they're moving things, they're using MetaMask, they're doing different wallets, they're buying NFTs, they're doing all these things that we haven't seen in the past. Whereas, you know, back in the last bull run, it was basically just ICOs with Ethereum, right? So there's gonna be more and more of that. It's early. And when it comes to the banks and the traditional financial institutions, I think they're just starting to worry. Like, they don't really, for a while, like, they didn't really care at all. It was too small. And they're just starting to think of it now. So they'll find a way to get their tentacles into it, whether it's through venture investing in these types of companies or buying these types of companies or, you know, continuing to offer other types of products in the traditional system that have exposure into these ecosystems. And they'll always find a way in,
yes.
You know what I mean? So I just don't know, like, if it'll be in as big of a way that the actual industry progresses on its own and there's companies that come up and disrupt a lot of it. And in Canada, we have essentially like a bank, a very insulated,
the oligopoly.
There. Yeah, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
You said it.
I got it.
So, you know, in the US, it's a lot more competitive, right? So then it's really just Wall Street and, you know, the Goldman Sachs and of the world kind of figuring out, and they're already thinking how they're going to be able to, they're already making moves on how they're going to get their tentacles into it.
The CBDCs, I think, is going to be a huge turning point, because once that's rolled out, I'm not sure exactly when is the roadmap for this, but I think once this is rolled out, I think adoption is going to happen at an incredible pace, because then people will be exposed to it, not just people, but also institutions like banks and so forth. And I think at that point, you're going to then see institutions like banks really look at these digital assets as a place to attract businesses, attract customers, and they might start offering. And I think that's going to be one of the points. CBDCs is something that's, I think, is going to be a very pivotal point in this whole crypto industry.
When do you think that's coming?
That's a good question. I have absolutely no idea. I suspect within the next 2 to 3 years in Canada, I could be way off. What are your thoughts? When do you think it's going to happen?
I think it's going to take a lot longer.
In China, I know they're rolling it out much sooner, but it's a different ball of wax there.
They're just doing it so they can surveil everybody.
So what do you think we would do it? I mean, you don't have to answer that because you're, you know, you got to
talk about it. I don't know. I just think it's longer than 3 years. I think that the payment rails here and the way that like the traditional banking system works, like I don't think.
Doesn't lend itself to that style, you don't think? Not at least not at the moment.
Yeah, it's like imagine trying to change like a huge amount of like outdated systems, outdated architecture.
It's modernizing it essentially.
It like all the power to them, and I hope it happens sooner than later. That would be fantastic.
CBDCs?
Why not?
Oh man, how long you got?
Joey could go on for a long time.
Less
fees.
Yeah, I'll give you 30 seconds.
Be careful
if,
when
if not you're... if not even 30 seconds. I just think where there is an opportunity for
he mentioned what happened in what's going on with
China. Yeah, where there's opportunity for malintent, you will get malintent from most first world governments if you give them enough time and enough runway. And so that's what I worry about more than anything else.
Right. I always try to look at like the positive of a situation and the silver lining, and I think like that potentially like if they're having to build currency on blockchain, there's got to be some sort of silver lining where it just becomes less expensive for.
Well, so you're saying blockchain CBDC? Like, see, if it's on blockchain, I get it. But as far as I know, like the CBDCs that are being proposed in places like the United States, you know, some of the commentary you see from them, from European Central Bank chief economist Christine, yeah, my friend Christine, doesn't sound like it's going to be blockchain based. It sounds more like it's going to be a, you know. Again, I feel like I got the tinfoil hat on here sitting at this table, but like, you know, this sort of tweaking monetary policy to the individual level, for example, you know, we want you to spend a certain way, spend a certain amount. It's not opportunity for savings. This is for economic stimulus, things of that nature, right? That's what I worry about. Maybe I'm a little far off the curve there, but you know, it's definitely not. If you made that statement 5 years ago, would have been a different response. Now the response is, okay, well, you know, I wouldn't bet against that necessarily.
Well, you're handing a lot of power, potential power over to you know, the group of people that are managing it and overseeing it. And I can see where you're coming from, Joey.
I know you can. You're my co-host.
No. But even outside of that realm, I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming. Because obviously, Jordan talked about it happening right now in China. At least the reason why they're rolling it out in China is perhaps for surveillance purposes. So there may be some other reasons why that CBDCs might be on the radar for central banks and governments kind of pulling the pull strings.
You don't have to answer that. I wanted you to go after government CBDCs there, but that's okay. I know you were bugging us before we started. You want to talk about your extensive NFT collection. Do you want to – which snakes do you own? Which frogs?
I want to see the rocks. I'm really curious what to see the rocks.
So. Sell me on NFTs. It's only fair. Like I said on the show that came out today, this is – what day is today? The 5th? 4th? Something like that?
Third.
Go figure. I don't know the day. But I've come off my position of these things are completely ridiculous. I think if there's a way to display them, it's only a matter of time until people younger than me, you know, call me a crotchety old man and tell me that I don't get it. And it's possible that I don't get it. But you mentioned that you think this is a thing that's sort of burgeoning maybe.
Yeah, full disclosure, I don't own any NFTs.
I know.
But
it'd be cool if you did.
But, yeah. But you know, some of the guys who work here may.
Could you bring them in here? We want to line them up against the wall.
I just thought it would be cool to be able to display them like at home as a digital version of art. Like, I do own a Samsung Frame TV and I do put art on there that displays. I said, why not own that art and have that display in my house as opposed to buying some sort of, you know, oil paint painting or whatever it is.
I mean, you don't have the chart of Bitcoin constantly running on your Samsung.
The price, yeah.
That's what I would do if I had the opportunity to do so.
We actually used to, at our old office, we used to have a dashboard and we would keep the prices like real time, just like feeding up. So, but I don't know. I think that it's going to continue to grow. I think that it's probably a market that may be overhyped at this point. But I think it's cool because it's this new type of use case where people are, you know, putting art on the blockchain. And, you know, the more types of use cases that we can find that, you know, blockchain lends itself to, the more that this space grows, the more that, you know, that you have disruption and you improve the way that I think people live their lives. So
I'm all for it.
Where there's a case use, I think it might be, and correct me if I'm wrong, you could kick me in the nuts later.
I'll wait till we get in the car.
But maybe when you NFT a driver's license or a OHIP card. Or
this is a version of NFTs, right? It's sort of the same. I guess it's the same tech. I mean, I'll look to the tech guy at the table, but I think it's more or less the same tech for something like that, right? It's sort of irreplicable. And
well, what's going on with those vaccine passports? I don't have
one. I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
I have the, like, we both have our shots. I'm not going to ask if you have yours, but like, I have to flash that QR code basically everywhere I go. I don't have it. I don't have an app on my phone or anything, but I mean, I don't know if that's
the QR code, right?
Yeah.
Is that on an app? Because I don't have one of those.
It's not on the app.
Not because I don't have a shot.
They give you a secondary, you got your receipt. Looks like something you got from like a Chapters in 1998.
And you could load that up on your Apple device.
Oh, on the wallet.
Yes. Yeah. And only on the Apple device. My Google device doesn't have that functionality.
I see.
You could bask in the glory of the greatness of Apple and show me how crappy my phone is.
So I got my shots in the US. Yeah. And so now everywhere I go, I guess I could load it into that app, but I'm just like screenshotting the picture. And then I just like, I'm trying to like scroll back and find the picture. I'm like, there's the picture of the card that
so
I got.
So you essentially just did a right-click paste. Right-click save.
That's the bear case for NFTs right there. Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's closed.
It's the same thing.
So.
Okay, Jordan, you've been a great interview. I want to thank you once again for your hospitality.
Don't you have one question to ask?
Oh, I'm going to get him in a sec.
All right.
We have a ring light here that your IT staff has provided for us. Thank you very much for that. Now, I want to give you some grief in your personal life, okay?
So be ready, because he's going to come at you hard with this
question. Two things. One, you look like you don't miss a lot of meals. So how much do you bench?
You know what? I actually don't do a lot of bench press. I'm more focused on types of, you know, core strengths and mat type workouts, especially like after the pandemic. I didn't have a bench press at home. So
is this a question because of what happened?
It's going to be new. We got,
I used to bench more in my college days, but
okay.
I don't even know what's one plate on each side.
That's 135. Yeah. If that's what you bench, you don't share.
I don't like to go and like overdo it.
Right. You don't like, max out. You don't top out on that.
I do my bench press on the keyboard, if you know what I mean.
So we're not going to know is 1 RM.
You got that shirt too? I do my bench press on the keyboard?
I don't know. Let's NFT it. Let's make an NFT out of it.
We're getting trolled by a CEO of a publicly traded Bitcoin miner, and he's coming on our show.
Yeah, he's coming on soon. It's actually Trevor Linden's brother, Dean Linden. Yeah, long story there. But anyway. Okay, so you don't bench. That's fine. We'll have to look there.
Now, how about you?
I was moving 225 yesterday. I can do 225 pretty easily. Yeah.
Attaboy.
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm 34, so I'm not getting any stronger. I'm just trying to stay at 225. That'd be great.
I'm just trying not to have back pain, man.
Yeah, you and me both. I know. Yeah, cardio is a lot more important. Same with stretching. I'll tell you what. I didn't start thinking about the pillows I bought until like 2 years ago. But now I think about the pillows. Now I think about the pillows I buy. Okay, other questions. So give me, and listeners didn't get the awesome tour that Len and I got. Thank you for that as well. So you introduced us to a few members of your management team. Who are they? What do they do?
Okay, so we got the CEO, Michael Arbus. He's focusing on everything at this point. He came on about a year ago, and he's really helped us with the regulatory side, custody, insurance, communicating everything with the regulators. Things that, for myself, heads down operations, I haven't had the time to get to a lot of these things. So getting us that level ahead. He's a bit older than me, has a bit more experience running different businesses. So I know what I know and I know what I don't know. He has a more traditional financial background. He's been great. We have our CCO, our chief compliance officer. He also has a traditional background. So he's helping a lot on the compliance side and the regulatory side as well. Dean, you met, he's the CFO at this point. So he's running our accounting department. We have multiple years of audits. We also have done 3 years of proof of solvency audits. We were the first ones to do that in Canada out of any Canadian crypto platform back in 2019. And basically that just showed that all the assets that we're holding under custody on behalf of our clients net out positively based off of what's in our platform, third party audited. You met Charlie, our VP of marketing. I think he was the one who got you guys to come by here. Yeah. So he's been awesome. He's been with us since early days. We have a VP of account management and sales. I don't know if you met her, Trish. She's amazing. And then, of course, you know, our VP of operations, Brandon.
That's cool.
Brandon, he's awesome. Well, he's amazing. Cool. Brandon.
Oh yeah. Brandon. Oh my God. We can't say that on this podcast. Let's go, Brandon.
So yeah. So we've been built. We also have a chief anti-money launder officer, Joseph. So, you know, we've been building out, like, from when we started early to then scaling up and hiring a bunch of additional customer service and engineering folk to help with the scaling issues, then to more recently being able to focus more on building out that senior level team, that team that's going to help us get to the next level.
Okay, that was a great pitch for your team. I don't care about your C-suite expansion. What I care about is, can you take Charlie in a 40-yard dash, concrete? We always do concrete. I kind of think you'd be like, I know I'm way faster on cleats than I am on running shoes. And I think I'm faster than other people are faster on cleats.
Before you answer that,
my legs.
What do they look like?
They're pretty big.
Strong, yeah. Can you take them?
I'll take them.
Charlie's pretty.
I'll probably take him 8 times out of 10.
He's probably like 6'4". Eh? He's pretty big.
A little lanky.
Yeah.
You know what? I got the pylons.
Why is he good? He's a good golfer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take him on.
Len's known to play 18.
So I have the pylons downstairs. We're gonna close off these roads here. We'll have a few races. We'll actually settle this.
If we're not having fun, guys, then what are we doing it all for? Right.
That's right. That's right. That's good. Okay, Jordan Anderson, COO of BitBuy.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us, buddy.
Hey, man. Thanks for being here. And for all the listeners who are also BitBuy users or are thinking about being BitBuy users, thank you to you guys. We're going to continue to build the best platform in Canada and make sure that you guys are happy. More coins, lower fees, the whole gambit. We're going to continue to add new products and make sure that it's a safe place to store your crypto, trade your crypto, and get the best pricing.
Love it.
Look forward to seeing you in a Lambo in a few minutes.
Yes, sir. Take care, everybody.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.